This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. And a terrific service department, routine to difficult. They handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Very quickly, the three things I said were negative about Illinois all came up at once on Saturday. One, I said no natural point guard. Then when you look at them play, they're not a good defensive team, despite what Brad says. And number three, they are not a Phi Beta Kappa basketball team. Oh! And then they go to Brad in the sideline. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. I'm like, what? I called Dick. I said, can you believe this guy? Actually, we can. All right, so let's go to the line and bring in the outstanding Nate Bauer, the guy that will straighten us out and tell us everything that we're doing wrong and set us right. How are you, sir?
Oh, stop it. You're perfect. You know it.
Well, I will start, by the way, sir, since it's a non-golf day, with some basketball. Penn State did get a commitment on a transfer, which, by the way, if you want to talk to Dr. Girardi about him, he will speak volumes about him. He saw him play a lot in high school. So that's why I got a pretty good handle on this guy. And I'm telling you, you should turn that direction. I think it'll help you out, especially with some of the people that just have no idea what they're talking about. All right. I forgot you deal with them every day.
I'm included with those people.
But Dick's seen him play a lot. Not a little, a lot. But, you know, what does, you know, at least out of the gate, tell you about the direction they're going with some of this and how difficult is the transfer cycle to report on, because not everybody is very forthcoming once they give their initial list. That way they're playing people off everybody.
You brought it all up at once. I mean, it's where do I start? Let's start with the latter half there. The transfer portal reporting is going to be difficult, and I don't think I quite grasped the misdirection that's involved. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you heard things last year. I felt like last year was fairly straightforward to report on. You know, I think that people kind of knew what everybody else was doing in terms of visits, right? So, but a couple of things. One thing that's super interesting to me, and that has been reflected over the last week or two, is people are getting, right, so when guys go into the portal, they are getting a flood of attention, right? And so you see these tweets that basically are, you know, from national reporters basically saying, oh, you know, player X has entered the transfer portal and has heard from, and then there's a list of 30 schools, right?
Right.
And so what's happening is players are hearing from 30 schools on the first day. They're hearing from 30 more schools on the second day. And then they're hearing from very few schools after that. And so what's actually happening is players are hearing initially because it's kind of that recruiting theme of you want to be in first, you want to be in early. But then once teams go back and start to do their homework and get a grasp and a grip on who these guys actually are, you know, they see that one of three things, right? They either don't fit what you're actually trying to do. You know, the NIL element is too high, right? It's just not going to fit. It's not going to work because what they're asking for in the transfer portal is too much. And I'm forgetting the third, but those two elements on the front side are making things very, very challenging. You know, for teams to be able to actually identify and bring in the players that they want. So what I'm watching as a reporter this transfer cycle is who's visiting. Right, who's actually going to these schools? Because most of these commitments aren't happening without visits. These guys are going to come to campus. Kachi, was one of those guys. He was at Penn State last week and ended up committing on the last day of his visit. So that's some of what I'm watching here in the transfer portal.
I am aware. All right, I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah.
So next up. Okay, because this is also looking at a positional balance. Based on what Penn State lost in the transfer portal,
yep.
What do you, in terms of positional balance, what might they need during this cycle?
Yeah, they need, this is the first part of your question that I didn't answer. They need size desperately. There's really no, not like there's any mystery to this, right? And so I think that what Kachi brings is, and this is where it's going to be interesting to see how they fill out the rest of these scholarships, right? They've got four to play with. Now they have three with his commitment, at present anyway. They only have one true power forward center, right? Four or five, right? I mean, I don't know about you. Like, I'm not calling Zach Hicks a four. I'm not calling Puff Johnson a four. Those guys don't play like that. That's not who they are. So knowing that, understanding that, I'm actually just writing about it right now. Like, Penn State finished minus 5.2 in rebound. Like, they were dead right. Last in rebounding against Big Ten competition.
I may have noticed.
Yes. What's that?
I said I may have noticed.
Yeah, you may have noticed. Yeah, I mean, it was a thing. And Rhodes was honest about it. Mike Rhodes was honest about it. He was like, look, this is some of this goes beyond what you're trying to do, right? Like, players can try hard. Like, you know, I think Puff Johnson, when he had minutes, was trying hard to get rebounds. Zach Hicks was trying hard to get rebounds. But sometimes you're limited athletically and in size differential that you just can't do anything about. Kachi helps fix that. He gives them a true four. He gives them a four that's going to be a power forward. And where I felt on the front end he was going to be more of a developmental piece who might be in line for, you know, he averaged 10 minutes at Xavier. He bumped that up down the stretch to maybe 15, 20 minutes a game. I think he's going to be a 20 minutes a game guy for Penn State next season with ample room for growth. But he would have been a true difference maker in terms of that rebounding element that Penn State just, and Rhodes specifically, realized and understood deeply. You can't exist like this. You cannot have right. A team that doesn't have a four who can't gobble up some of those rebounds that they needed.
Well, that's one of the reasons why. Look, you go through the league and you learn early. You need. All right, you can talk about centers all you want, right? But this is a league where if you have bigger wings, it really helps. And
yep.
It's, you know, I don't think there are some people that realize that. But I will leave that to you to talk about. But that's just the reality of the league if you're actually, like, really paying attention to it and actually know basketball.
Yep. Yep. No, you have to. You have to have... You have to have that size. You have to have that physicality, right? It's not just you can be 6'7", 6'8", and weigh 220 pounds and not gravitate toward contact and physicality.
That's right.
You cannot be afraid of that. And again, there is a place for some of that play and for some of those guys to excel. They have opportunities, but you also need somebody that can be a dog. Right, I mean, I don't know who first came up and coined Junkyard Dog, but like this kid fits that. You do think that for Mike Rhodes' teams and the identity that he brings and the characteristics and the culture that he wants to have at Penn State, this, like, I don't want to set the wrong expectations in terms of what Kachi can do right off the bat. I think that he does need room for development and to grow, sure. But he like high motor, right? He's going to be a dog. He's going to be willing and enthusiastic about bringing that element to the floor for Penn State, and they desperately, desperately needed it this past season and just didn't have it.
Yeah. All right, and it's just the beginning. We'll see what else they want to do because they still, I believe, they have four spots to fill, something like that. And, of course, you know, and then there's the recruiting part of it, and we'll see how the recruiting class plays out with this group as well along the way. Not just what has it meant, the guys that stayed, the guys that they've kept, because now they're going to get a full year with Greg Golden in the strength and conditioning program. They understand Mike's system more. What does that mean moving forward?
Yeah, no question. You know, look, I think that certainly Puff Johnson announced that last week that he was coming back, and that's huge. I just, you know, to be clear to anyone listening, right? Ace Baldwin is a question. I think that if I'm ballparking in my honest assessment, he is very likely to come back to Penn State for another season. But, right, these guys are bonus years, and all of those guys, it doesn't matter whether you're talking football or basketball, they all have to decide whether or not they still want to be a college student, right? Once they're 22, 23 years old, sometimes that becomes challenging. So Ace is still out there, and we'll see what happens with him. But yeah, you know, Puff Johnson, Zach Hicks, Nick Kern coming back, those are big. Those are all big. DeMarco Dunn expected back. You know, to have had the season that they had this year with some of the holes in the lineup that they had, if you can cement and keep as much of that core together as you can, and all of those guys that I just mentioned had significant roles. They may have had roller coaster seasons in a lot of ways, but if you can keep those guys and build on the things that they did well and try to improve on some of their vulnerabilities, some of their weaknesses, yeah, I think it's a great opportunity for Penn State to establish some continuity, right? It just, I mean, and you knew this, and everybody knew this. It is one thing to talk about, hey, you know, 10 new guys into the program over 59 days, and that was an impressive feat to bring those guys in. But now this program has an opportunity to take a breath and be judicious and purposeful, right? You're not just filling bodies. You know what your weaknesses are. You know what the returning strengths are. How do you complement them? How do you build a team that is an actual team, not just a collection of pieces? And I give them a ton of credit for what they were able to do this year, but I do think my perception of what they can do next year and beyond is optimistic, given the opportunity to actually bring those pieces in through the transfer portal. They have to do it. They have to actually bring those pieces in. And NIL and how big that war chest is going to play a big part in what they're able to bring in. But it's out there. There are 1,000 players plus in the transfer portal right now. The opportunity to be selective and bring some guys in that they feel like fit the mold, yeah, it bodes well.
You asked me an interesting question at practice the other day. It's like it was the one after you said you're quitting, right? No. And you said, you know, what's the sense of the vibe? Well, you talk to a lot of fans about football.
I do.
Right? So, you know, now look, it's a segment. It's not a big segment, but it's a segment out there, and they're vocal. So what's, you know, what's the vibe that you have right now with this spring practice?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and I'm not. To me, I always get caught up with what's the vocal minority, right? And what is the broader sentiment? And to me, I do see after the last year, a sense of disillusionment. I would say, right? Even among fan, like among people who do have optimism, who do bring a sense of hope to how they perceive the next season. But I do think that Penn State football is in a great rut, right? I think that's how I perceive it, is, hey, they have been very good. James Franklin has demonstrated time and time, like nobody is doubting that the direction and the leadership of the Penn State football program can deliver 10, 11 wins a season. And that is very good. It is very, very good. But the one thing that everybody wants is excellent. They want beyond very good. They want to get over the top. And I do think that there is a validity to the sense that against Ohio State and Michigan specifically, Ole Miss, we can have a debate about, but that was not the same Penn State team that took the field that day. Doesn't matter, though. Ohio State and Michigan are the reason that they were in that game in the first place, and they didn't play or perform really to the level that made it feel competitive. Those weren't close games, ultimately, right? Penn State needs to score more points. Bottom line, they got to have a better offense. They got to be more explosive. They have to be more potent offensively. And so that sense of disillusionment, I think, is riding on, hey, what has changed, right? Andy Kotelnicki came into Penn State's offense this year. But Drew Allard needs to be better than he was in those games. The receivers are mostly the same faces. They brought in Julian Fleming, for sure. But you've got a lot of the same pieces that you are asking to deliver where they weren't able to and really didn't come close to being able to last season. So it sets up a weird vibe this offseason of, you hope that Penn State can get it over the top, but do fans expect that with James Franklin, with this program right now? I would say no. And that's it's a very curious place for the program to be, in my opinion, because they have demonstrated that you can get to this level, and the more shots that you get at it, you will have opportunities to get over the top. But they have to go out and do it, and now you're at a point where it's 7 months away until they get that next chance.
Right, because yeah, they've been in the top 5% since 2016. The problem is the playoffs include the top 3%. That's right. And now we'll see what happens now with it going to 9%, what it means. Nate, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for the brilliance, the insight, how well it was articulated, everything that makes you you.
Oh, stop it. I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me. As always, I'll see you at practice tomorrow.
Nate Bauer on 3.com, Blue White Illustrated. This half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com and News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. While Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you in part by our good friends at NIL Game Changers, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities for both athletes and businesses. Visit NILGameChangers.org to start your journey. Mike DeCourcy at 206 today. And Final Four is set. The Lady Lion basketball team plays in an hour. They are playing Villanova in the WBIT semifinals at Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. They're going to play the WBIT semifinals today there. The NIT semifinals tomorrow are there. The WBIT title game is going to be Wednesday there, and that's on ESPN2. And the NIT championship game will be at Hinkle as well on Thursday. That's all at Hinkle Fieldhouse, where Bobby Plump hit the shot that Jimmy Chitwood made famous in Hoosiers.
Just actually watched the last hour of that on TV this weekend.
Well, when Penn State, now I have broadcast a game in there, so I have done that before. But 2 years ago, Penn State went there and practiced when they were at the Big Ten tournament, and they played their way into the quarterfinals. And so they practiced over there. So the players were asking me, where did he hit the shot from? And I showed them. If you're watching the big dog at the center of the floor, okay, if you look to the right, okay, and it's inside the three-point line on the right wing, that's where he hit the shot from. So, just in case you're wondering, that's because it's a real story. It's real life. They just changed Milan to Hickory, but that's where he hit the shot from. Now, whether it was off the picket fence, I don't know. That part I don't know. So Illinois doesn't have a natural point guard. Not good. Doesn't play great defense, despite what Brad says. Not good. And sorry, Brad, you don't. I watched again Penn State scoring a boatload of points every time they played them. And then the third part is they're not Phi Beta Kappa basketball. It's just, okay? And it showed over and over again. It was stunning. You're watching the game on Saturday. They kept going in. Now, I don't blame them. Let's go early and see. You have to probe. They go in and cling and blocks it. They go in and cling and blocks it. They go in. Well, the third time they go in and block it, don't you think maybe you ought to come up with something different and then maybe try it a little bit later? Nope. And they go and they talk to Brad, and he says, oh, no, we're going to keep doing what we're doing. And I thought to myself, you're going to get buried. And guess what? They got buried. I think the most unanswered points I've seen that I have broadcast, is 18. I'm trying to think, 18? No, that's not true. The most I have broadcast is 25. Okay? Kentucky did it to Penn State, and then I saw Penn State do it to St. John's in the Garden. 25 unanswered points. 30? Nope, never saw that before. Nope.
Especially in an Elite Eight game.
Yeah. But again, a lot of things about the matchup I liked. But again, the three things about Illinois I didn't like all reared their ugly heads. Okay? No natural point guard. That sort of played out. So I'll give that as a eh. Right? But the fact that they're not a good, that they are a Swiss cheese defensive team, and they are not, how do I say this diplomatically? They're just
basketball savvy.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. Like, holy mackerel. And so UConn's in. UConn is going to get Alabama. Now, we all know what the Alabama formula is, and it's this goes back to when they played Penn State. And I talked about it in the pregame with Dick Girardi. He said, Dick, there's three things Nate Oates wants offensively. He wants layups, free throws, and threes. They don't want that many twos. And they hit 15 threes the other day. Mark Sears was great. And you saw the value when I was doing the show a year and a half ago, and they announced that Clemson was Penn State's ACC challenge team. And I said, we'll see about P.J. Hall. Because Hall had surgery. And I said, let's see if he plays. If he plays, it changes Clemson dramatically. Well, he did play against Penn State. Clemson won in double overtime, and Hall played a terrific game. And they won in double overtime. Well, you saw Hall's value right out of the gate. And what he meant. And by the way, I thought that Clemson did the right thing. They were playing him with four fouls. What the heck? Gave him the best chance to win. You got to keep playing him. And Alabama hit the 15 threes. They made enough free throws. Pringle made some big plays. And again, Alabama basketball. They want to play fast. Right? They want to get layups. They want to hit threes. All right.
Did you see their shot chart from Saturday?
I did not.
They didn't take 1 2-pointer outside the paint.
Yeah. And that's how they play.
Yeah, it's impressive to look at though that they did not even 1 2-pointers outside of the paint.
But again, what do you want defensively? Defensively, you always want teams to take the shots you want. Not the shots they want. You want them to take shots that you want. Now, if they hit them, they hit them. But you wanted them to take as many longer twos as possible. Alabama won't do that. They won't do that. Now, against UConn, they're going to have to hit 15 threes. Not 10. They're going to have hit 15. It's the way it is. It's their best way, their best chance of winning. And Oates is the kind of guy who has embraced Alabama football. When he got there, and Mike Rhodes has done the same thing. Mike Rhodes has been to Penn State football practice. Mike Rhodes has attended football meetings. Nate Oates did the same thing at Alabama. He talked to Nick Saban. He said, can I go to practice? Saban said, absolutely. Oates would go to practice. Oates would go to meetings because he wanted to see it may be a different sport, but the genesis of a winning culture. It's just like when Sean McDermott came down here with Terry Pegula and they met with Cale Sanderson. Same thing with the Bills. Okay? You want to take in as much information from winners, and what are the common denominators among winners? Well, he's done that, all right. And he did a great job at Buffalo. I mean, not a good job. He did a great job at Buffalo, and then he goes to Alabama. And he's implemented this. And they use a lot of analytics as to what they do. And I mean along the way, like, you shoot threes. When you shoot threes and miss, are they a little bit to the left or are they a little bit to the right? They use all of this. All of it. And that's what they do. So, and they'll get, and again, they're going to have to hit 15 against against UConn. And it doesn't matter about volume. Right? Okay. They took 36 threes the other day. They hit 16 of them. Hey, guess what? It's point value. So if I take 36 twos, that's 72 points. Okay? If I am 18 to 36, I have 72 points. Right? So you talk about the absolute point value of it. Okay? 36 twos, and you hit 18 of them. Great. Well, what if you go out there and go 16 to 36 in threes? Well, guess what you have? Okay? Instead of getting 36 points, you get 48. That's the point value of the shot. That's what it is, the point value of the shot. Now, NC State, I will draw a little bit upon a little bit on Villanova Georgetown 1985. I'm doing this show back then. It's a Monday night, and I picked Villanova to win. And, of course, I have people calling the show saying I'm certifiably insane. I said, I understand that. I said, but in a basketball sense. But my reasoning was simple. Why did I give Villanova a shot? Because if I could handpick any team that would walk on the floor at Rupp Arena and look at Patrick Ewing and go, okay, no big deal, seen that, done that, that would walk on the floor and see John Thompson and everybody and would go, all right, been there, done that, it was Villanova. Why? They play them all the time. Has Ed Pinckney been schooled by Patrick Ewing? Yes. Had Ed Pinckney at times schooled Patrick Ewing? Yep. He wasn't intimidated. He didn't look out there and go, whoa, what are we doing here? Villanova had played them over and over and over again for years. I mean, for Pinckney, who knows how many Georgetown games he'd played against Ewing at that point, right? So he didn't go out there and go, oh, what do we do now? Okay? James Madison walks out against Duke and goes, whoa, that's Duke. Yeah, they talked a big game going in, but you could tell that they were just completely awestruck. NC State plays Duke all the time. They could give a darn about the name on the front of the jersey. They don't care about that. They just played them a couple weeks ago, the beginning of the month. So that part is by the boards. Now it's just let's go out and play and see who's better. Because they're not going out there going, oh my goodness, it actually does say Duke in the front. That's Kyle Filipowski. Wow. No. They walked out and go, yeah, it's Filipowski. This is how we play him. Okay? That's Proctor. That's how we know how to play him. He's on the scouting report. We've done a whole bunch of Duke scouting reports this year. All right. All right. That's McCain. We know what he does, although McCain played really well yesterday. So at that point, now it's a question of you executing better than them. It's not about, I'm not sure about this at all. NC State went out there and went, okay, it's Duke. Let's go play ball. And Duke looked like they were so tight the entire day. They looked tight the whole time. NC State, even when they were losing, looked like they were having fun. Yeah, okay, great. Nobody expects it. Yeah, good. We're great. We're doing fine. And Burns is fun to watch. Now, one thing that will be interesting is Diarra. Because it's Ramadan. And I remember Gerald Smith. Remember he played wide receiver here at Penn State? I remember in spring practice, Ramadan, they always wanted to make sure they watched over. They wanted to make sure what time he was eating. They wanted, how much he was eating early in the day before sunrise, make sure that he'd get his dinner right when sundown happened all the time. But during practice, he couldn't have any water, right? I don't think you can eat or drink during daylight hours, right? Am I correct about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to make sure I'm right about it because I'm not going to pretend I have all the answers on that. But that's the way I believe it is. Well, so, and the problem they're going to have is they're the first game on Saturday. Ramadan doesn't end until the 9th. So Diarra is playing games, and you know how they're constantly hydrate, right? Everything's there. I mean, all the time, hydrate. They talk about it all the time, and he's not doing it. Right? And, hey, that's his religious belief. You're not going to hear an ounce of criticism from me. Zero. None. It's like when Sandy Koufax didn't pitch game one of the 65 World Series against the Twins because it was Yom Kippur. Right? So he pitched game two. And I'm just saying it's something to watch for in this game because guess what? You got to face Zach Eadie. Right? And Trey Kaufman Wren. So in the second half of a game like that, where are you? Because keep in mind, well, it's going to get dark here. They're playing in Pacific time. The 3 hours earlier. The game's going to start at 3:09 in Glendale. I'm just saying it's a side note. Burns is wonderful to watch. He's fun, great passer, soft touch. I mean, really, a lot of fun. Horn is, I like Horn a lot. And then there's Purdue. Braden Smith's the engine. But how many fouls can you call in the game with Zach Eadie? And we'll talk to Mike DeCorsi about this, about how difficult he is to officiate. This season, Eadie, on average, drew 9.7 fouls per game. He drew 9.7 fouls per game. You want to know how many he committed per game? 1.9. In the last 67 games, Zach Eadie has hit 4 fouls himself 6 times. That's it.
That is amazing for a man of that size.
I know. But when you talk about going over the back of somebody, hey, that's not really the right way to look at it. It's being on their back when you have something called.
Honestly, my biggest thing watching Purdue and the way they officiate him is he gets away with more offensive fouls, I believe, that he sometimes initiates contact in the post that they don't call, and then they get the guy hitting or, you know, being physical back with him on that play more than it is on rebounds.
All right. Yeah. So you can lean into somebody with one arm, Todd. Okay? You can't use both. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
And you'll see people try to use both because, look, it's a big problem.
You're defending the landform, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, and he's 7'4", and he's the only guy I've ever seen that cut down his portion of the net not using the ladder.
Yeah, that was pretty funny yesterday.
Yeah, that was actually a riot to watch. Yeah. So. Unreal. All right. They say right now it's mountain time there, but they have it listed at 10:54. We're at 1:54, right? Isn't that 3 hours?
Yeah. It's Arizona doesn't do daylight saving. Parts of Arizona do daylight savings. Maybe that's right. I don't know.
I see. You know what they're on right now? We're on Eastern Daylight Time. They're on Mountain Standard Time. They don't change their clock there. So they're actually on Pacific Time right now, but it's labeled Mountain Standard Time because they're not on Pacific Daylight Time because they don't change. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not confusing.
Doesn't matter. Here's the key. They're 3 hours behind. Yeah. All right, we'll come back. This half hour has been brought to you by NIL Game Changers, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities for both athletes and businesses. Visit NILGameChangers.org. A little bit later, the suit will explain why he has McNeese stayed in the Final Four. All right, I have special guests in the studio. I have Ryan Jones and Madeline Jones here in the studio with me. He is an outstanding hockey player and goaltender who, in a six-game tournament up in Buffalo, had four shutouts, and she is an outstanding gymnast. And I'm extremely prejudiced for obvious reasons. The glory of having grandchildren, Todd.
I thought you were at Matt's house for a second.
No. I'm not there. Like it would be more of, he does a great job cutting the grass. No.
That's true.
Do we have the Prince of Peace on with us tomorrow?
As far as I know, he has not said he is not.
I mean, the Yankees are off to a 4-0 start, which means they have the same record as the Pirates.
I bet. People are excited about the Pirates. I still see people complaining online, even though the Yankees are 3-0. Must be tough to be a Yankees fan, man.
Well, they have expectations, and they haven't met expectations in two decades.
Well, you're not wrong.
Meanwhile, there aren't a lot of expectations when it comes to the Pirates. I think it's fun what they're doing so far. In fact, I'm going to probably go to a ball game maybe in 2 weeks after spring practice is over.